Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Ah, can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, football fans, for those of you who can't get enough Baldy's Breakdowns, be sure to subscribe to Brian Baldinger's The Best Football Show. New episodes drop Monday through Friday, where Baldy breaks down the best games of the week. Be sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Bob, we have a lot of things brewing all of a sudden. Cam Hayward on a podcast had some interesting things to say about the Steelers' game plan in Baltimore. We're going to get into that before the top of the hour. And Marlon Humphrey, this was eye-opening, intimating that something's not quite right here. We're going to get into that in just a moment.
Here meaning Pittsburgh,
yes, with the Steelers.
Here meaning here.
Certainly not there. They're headed to Buffalo.
As a favorite, surprisingly, but they are.
Yes. This is from Benzie this morning, and he tells us in his first call that Max Crosby is endorsing the idea of the Raiders signing Najee Harris. What do you think of that, Bob? Let me ask the question this way. Do you think Najee Harris is going to have a long, productive NFL career? Is he going to thrive somewhere else the way that he couldn't here? And I got a email the other day, somebody saying, man, you're nuts. You said that was a bad pick. This guy runs for 1,000 yards every year. He does this and that. I said he's been durable, and his numbers are, you know, he has counting numbers, but he's averaged 3.9 yards a carry in his career, 2.7 in the playoffs. They drafted, when you draft a guy in the first round as a running back, he needs to be a home run hitter. He's a singles hitter. That's how I feel about Najee. You?
And me too. I expected more production. But if the answer to the question is yes, he'll have a long, productive career, and he'll make his share of money. But it will not be as an elite running back. I just don't see it in him. What I see is someone who can contribute to the committee, the running back committee, whatever it may be, as a complement to another guy. But I don't see Saquon Barkley. I don't see the elite guys in the league right now in him. I just don't. Not his fault altogether. I mean, I don't think the blocking on the offensive line got better as this season went on. He's durable. He doesn't fumble largely. Those are all good things. He's out there. He runs hard. All good things. He'll get another job, and somebody may want to feature him, but I don't know that you're going to get the results that you're looking for if you expect him to be a feature back.
Max Crosby was talking, was this on a podcast? I'm not sure. He said, why not? About Najee. He's from the Bay. Najee's a baller. Anybody that could help when it comes to winning and being a culture guy, a leader, that's the type of guy I want around. You've seen Najee. Max Crosby says he's played 4 years in the league and has 1,000 yards every season. He's a tough blanking guy to tackle. I'd love to have a guy like Najee around. Sounds to me like he might be expecting too much. I hate to say this, but I'm not sure that it's going to get better. I think it might get worse for Najee elsewhere. At least here, he had a team that wanted to run the ball and wanted to feature him. I don't know if I see Najee lasting very long, certainly not as a number one back. It's going to have to be in a timeshare.
Right. That's what I said. As part of a committee, if you get the committee approach, he can help that committee. I don't think there's any question. I think last year more than this year, you saw that with the compliment of him and Warren, but this year, too much was expected from that committee. And I think as a result, the numbers overall were not very good as a unit.
And I can't help but look at Najee as part of the failed plan around here, Bob. And you mentioned yesterday that they didn't really have a plan to replace Ben, but I would disagree at least this way. Their plan was to draft Mason Rudolph, and it wasn't like an eighth-round pick or something. They don't even have eight rounds, I don't think. It was a third-round pick, 76th overall. They traded up three spots to get him. You remember Ben's reaction on this station when they got him. So I think their plans, and I wrote about this for the Post-Gazette this morning, their plans for a post-Ben world started with this guy Mason Rudolph in 2018. And it soon became clear that he wasn't going to be the guy. So they sort of readjusted their sights, and clearly this was the plan. This was the crux of it, Bob.
I don't think it was a plan.
Okay, but let's forget about him for a minute. I think that's where it started. The plan clearly was to supplement a highly paid and hopefully elite defense with a young, dynamic offense. That's why you've seen five straight years of an offensive guy getting picked first. That's why you've seen 11 of their last 16 picks in rounds 1 through 3, offensive guys. They drafted a running back. They drafted a wide receiver or 2 or 3, Chase Claypool and Pickens. They drafted all kinds of linemen. They drafted a quarterback, 20th overall. They drafted a tight end as a luxury pick. And guess what? I think we can now say that mission failed so miserably. So miserably, with Kevin Colbert involved, Omar Khan involved, Mike Tomlin involved, that it's done. That era's done, and this offense, with most of those guys either leaving now or gone, this offense just finished a season in which it didn't have a single touchdown on its first drive of a game.
Stretching back to last year.
Finished 29th in red zone scoring, and had 29 yards and 14 points in another blowout playoff loss. What a blanking disaster this was, born of the arrogance of some of those picks, ill-advised picks, misguided hires in now two different coordinators, maybe three if you want to include Fichtner. It's just been a study in mismanagement on how to go into life after a legendary quarterback. Just a study in rampant mismanagement.
Well, I'm going to speak to the plan of trying to come up with a succession plan for a quarterback. Because I said this yesterday, and I really believe it looking back. And I know it's easy to look back. I guarantee you that a lot of people do now, but at the time they may have believed this. If your plan was to draft a quarterback in 2018 as the ultimate successor to Ben Roethlisberger, they justified it when they took, at pick 76 in round 3, a guy who they said they had a first-round grade on.
Traded up for him.
But a lot of people didn't have a first-round grade on it.
Right.
If their plan was to come away with a quarterback in that draft, why not Lamar Jackson in round 1?
44 picks is all that separated Lamar
they took
from Mason.
Terrell Edmonds ahead of him.
Garden variety safety.
And it was just because it was a need. Okay, you could find needs. But if your plan, this is why I don't think they really had a plan, if the plan was to come up with a quarterback in that draft who you can sit for a year or two or whatever the case may be until he's called upon, why not Lamar Jackson, who by all accounts was rated much higher than Mason Rudolph, and you had the chance to do it? Now, you may have thought going in you wouldn't get that chance, but he ended up getting 32nd overall.
Yes, 32nd.
If your plan was to get a quarterback, why not him? Why wait till a third round to get a guy who you may like? But obviously that assessment of him was wrong.
Why not him? I mean, that's something that they'll study in the history books someday when they pick apart the bones of this era of Steelers football and how they failed to replace Ben.
Right, and I think every unit, we talked about Green Bay twice, they did it, much to the chagrin of their incumbent. I get all that. It's a business, though. You have to make the decision based on that. Lamar Jackson was a more accomplished, I think, in terms of his overall athleticism and what they thought. Now, he had to develop a passing game. Mason Rudolph was really good in that crazy conference that threw the ball everywhere, and he took down Baker Mayfield in a significant game. But if he was that good, he would have been taken before the third round, I think. There
right.
were people who thought maybe he wasn't going to be. They thought differently. I would have just, if that's my number one issue that I want to start this plan, that would have been my choice.
Okay. Well, at least they doubled back and picked Kenny Pickett. But let's
again,
talk about
after duress of not having someone. They were still searching at that point. And when you search and hope is not necessarily the right way to go.
Yeah, we're speaking of the same thing, a multifaceted failed mission. I compared it to Napoleon's invasion of Russia here, Bob. Just ill-fated, ill-conceived, ill-executed, and unbelievably arrogant. For them to go out and take a running back and a tight end with their first two picks in the Najee year and leave Creed Humphrey on the board when they needed a center. I mean, some of the things that happened when they were trying to build this future offense, they go out and dump a boatload of money on a tackle, Chooks, who didn't like football, and a center, Kendrick Green, who didn't like center. They drafted him. He didn't even want to play center. The things that happened here were incredible. How about the hiring of an amateur coordinator in Matt Canada, and then what they hoped was a tried and true one in Arthur Smith, who in some ways is worse than Canada. How about the Canada disaster? It's hard to know where to start with how they mangled building an offense post-Ben. Let's start up front then. Let's start with the offensive line. They've rifled through multiple offensive line coaches, including the year the one guy, Adrian Clem, left in the middle of a season. He gets a job. Mike Tomlin gives him a break. Gives him a job after there are some questions about his career previous to here. You're the offensive line coach of the Pittsburgh Steelers, and he quits in the middle of the season. And
he got another offer that was more money.
It was painted as this is normal for an offensive line coach to quit in the middle of a playoff.
No, that
run.
Wasn't normal.
It's
but
not.
He did get an
it's
offer.
Not.
That
I
he
know
liked.
He did. I know he did, and it could have waited. I know he did. That was painted as nothing to see here. It's just our offensive line coach quitting in the middle of a playoff run. There were rumors they didn't like working with Canada. So go ahead and start with the line,
Well,
Bob.
The line, I mean, they're setting, you just mentioned, they draft Dan Moore, they draft Kevin Dotson, they draft Green. Of all the people they let go, it's Kevin Dotson, and he turns out to be really good and got a big paycheck, and he's been very effective. So they obviously thought he wasn't going to be what he has turned out to be.
They put him at the on the wrong side of the line and didn't develop him. And yes, ironically, and he's the best offensive player relative to his peers that they've taken during this post-Ben or he came late in the Ben era. The last 6 years, he's the best guy in the NFL right now that they drafted on offense.
Right, and for some reason he was just, they didn't like him, they didn't want him. And he goes away and he becomes a really good guard in the National Football
really
League.
Really good player.
Yeah. And now one of the better guys on their offensive line, which is playing this week in the game against Philadelphia. So they miscalculated him. They misjudged him.
Yep.
Green, they put in a position they should never have. It was a difficult thing to watch him play there because that was not his normal position. And they kind of forced it because they didn't have any answers.
Right.
And Dan Moore, you know, God bless him in that he's a really good dude. He works his butt off, but the longer he plays, I think the more exposed he gets. And that was true at the end of this season here. So
they've put all this time and effort into the offensive line. Tons of draft picks and
back-to-back first-round picks.
Tackles both and what they're left with and yes, one guy got hurt. What they're left with is two starting tackles after all these years now. Who led the NFL in combined sacks allowed for tackles. How about the receivers they've taken? Their first pick in 20 was Claypool. Their second pick in 22 was Pickens. Two guys, one of whom didn't make it to a second contract, one of whom might not make it to a second contract. The list just goes on, Bob.
And getting back to the succession plan, if you missed on the first one, which involved Lamar Jackson. You had a do-over, a mulligan, as we say in golf, right?
Yeah.
It could have been Jalen Hurts in round two over Chase Claypool, who was chosen before Jalen Hurts. If you felt like maybe Mason Rudolph was not the answer, we need to still address this succession plan.
Right.
This was the second opportunity. And again, I get it. We're looking backwards. It's easy to look backwards. But they had those opportunities, and they put a lot of money into time, investment, into trying to figure out what these guys are and translate their college success into what it could be in the pros.
For sure.
So that their job is to find those guys.
And
that was a mulligan,
them.
And they did not choose him.
Right.
And that's not to project that he would be this good here as he is in Philly. I don't know. But he has the tools, you know, and so they could have gone in that direction.
Yeah, the reason why I think this is a timely exercise is to do the autopsy here. is because we're about to say goodbye to Najee. That's where it all began, and he was one of the centerpieces for this. He's not going to be here. Artie Smith might not be here. George Pickens might not be here. And we've already said goodbye to Rudolph and, you know,
Claypool
and Pickett and James Washington and Matt Canada. It's an unbelievable disaster, Bob. What has happened here?
And that's why Patrick Peterson on his podcast said he wouldn't bring anyone back on offense, but yet he did.
After all of this, and oh, the other part of the plan was, yes, we'll put a ton of money into an elite defense. That allegedly elite defense became, and listen carefully to this, the first defense in the history of professional football to allow 40 or more points in three consecutive playoff games. Think about that. Think about it.
There's nothing to think about. It's been a failure there. Those are the games that matter the most. And when you come out, especially early in the games, and you mentioned the streak that is now 20 games in a row without a first possession touchdown, all these things matter for a team that has high standards.
A team that thinks it does things better than everybody because it never has a losing season. And that has absolutely and indisputably become the standard. And I feel like that's the thing they're most proud of at this point.
I don't think they're going to prop that up as something they're proud of.
It gets propped up on every single telecast,
well,
I can tell you that.
That's different than they believing it.
Well, what is their standard these days?
Well, it is a paper standard right now. They got to prove it to win in the playoffs and get to a Super Bowl. That's a standard for them. It should be, and they say it, but it hasn't lived up to it. But
in like almost
I said, I don't know that they're sitting there propping their chest, banging on saying, oh, we're
well,
great.
The reason I say that with Art is because he apparently is satisfied with this because not only does he keep extending his coach, he gave him a raise last time and gave him an unusually large extension of 3 years instead of two. So call me crazy, but after you could make a very solid argument that Tomlin's fate should have been tied to him hiring a horrible offensive coordinator in Matt Canada and drafting a below-the-line quarterback in Kenny Pickett, you could make the argument that when that blew up completely on both fronts, that they should have fired Mike Tomlin or at least put him on notice. And instead, Art Rooney gave him an unusually long contract extension with a nice raise in there. So, Bob, that's why, again, call me crazy, but it sure seems to me like Art doesn't have much of a problem with what's going on. He's rewarding the guy at the top of the food chain.
Well, I think more than anything, they still believe that stability is the way to go. That's the only reason I could think that that's ongoing. But I do know that, you know, last year he put and he raised the ante when he said we need to win postseason games.
It's an urgency. I understand that,
but he said it, so, you know, bottom line is it didn't happen. In fact, they regressed as this season went on. So these are things they have to deal with in this offseason, trying to figure out where they go next and how they...
Where do they go next? I think it was Fittipaldi who said multiple coaches could go. I mean, it's rearranging deck chairs at this point. So they fire Terrell Austin and bring in another figurehead defensive coordinator, and that's going to change something?
You know, I don't know. They're going to be judged on what they do in this offseason, clearly, but they... You know, Mike Tomlin said there'll be changes at every level. We'll see what that means. And it can't be just coaches' contracts expiring, and so therefore it's an easy way to make a change. It's got to be beyond that, I would think,
rearranging deck chairs. No, I don't see. There's where you and I disagree. There's nothing they can do short of moving on from the head coach that would, quote, make a statement.
Well,
nothing.
As I told you last year, I thought it was a perfect way to just see how this played out. By not extending and just saying you got a year left, we're gonna see what happens in this year. You know, our intentions are to win playoff games, and we'll judge everything accordingly.
Do you think Artie will be back?
What do you mean,
Arthur Smith?
You threw me off there when you said Artie. I'm like, wait a minute. yeah, I do, because I think he's not going to get a head coaching job. I would be surprised if he did. Would you?
I don't know, man. We have two teams that are as incompetent as the Bears and Jets want to interview him. They just might hire him.
As a head coach, he's had 3 straight 7-10 seasons.
Yeah.
He's coming off a season as offensive coordinator where the numbers don't look good.
Right.
He's not a hot commodity.
Did I mention the Jets and the Bears are the teams interested?
Okay. you know, you have a quarterback in Chicago, which should attract a lot of attention. I know Mike McCarthy's interviewed there. I don't know how many other people they've interviewed, but I would take my time with that, and it's very important given what's happened in Chicago. You know, there are a lot of teams in these same situations where these decisions moving forward are going to define what this franchise is in the coming years.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Welcome back to Pomp and Joe. Bob, news broke earlier today, the passing of Bob Uecker, just a legendary baseball figure. Did you have interactions with him?
Couple of times, yeah. Just briefly. I mean, didn't know him very well other than at the games where when he was in town with Milwaukee. And just a fun-loving guy. And would engage you, you know. Just I go up, introduce myself, tell him I'm a big fan. And he starts asking a little bit about what I do. Very cordial, very funny. Used to love to hang out with Steve Blass.
Oh, really?
And with those two, you never know where you're going to get the stories.
Oh,
where
wow.
Steve's one of the best storytellers there is. And then he is, too. So you can imagine sitting on the deck at night, maybe having a little drink and listening to those two chirp.
Where would you rather be? Did you say you had that experience?
No? I'm saying wouldn't that be nice to sit there?
Oh, my God, yes.
I play golf a lot with Steve over the years, and I've heard a lot of great stories.
Oh, Mr. Baseball was his nickname. 90 years old. Brewers calling it one of the most difficult days in Milwaukee Brewers history. He had battled small cell lung cancer, I guess, since 2023. It says here, I didn't know him at all, but seemed like just a wonderful, kind, naturally funny man, right?
Very funny, naturally funny. And also would take stories, and his memory was really good from what I remember just a few times again, talking about things that happened, whether it was at Three River Stadium. He would remember sharply some of the details of it. But I think his delivery, his self-deprecating personality, and the way he talked about himself sometimes was really interesting.
When the Brewers won the NL Central last year, their manager, Pat Murphy, it says here, threw an arm around Uecker in the locker room and pulled him in tight as players white-knuckled the corks ready to pop the champagne. And he said, in the locker room, there is no one who epitomizes a champion the way this man does right here. And the players chanted, Uke. How about that?
Yeah, that's pretty impressive at his age, too. And I think the one thing about them, they understood the history of, and I think any player, really, you're making a mistake if you don't embrace the history of whatever organization you play for. You should know all about it. You should want to learn about it. And the people before you who played and maybe set standards are high, and Bob Uecker was one of those guys. So he was always very, very approachable. That's another thing I liked about him. You know, some guys get to be, oh, I'm Bob Uecker, I don't have time for you. He wasn't ever like that. He was always very approachable. Every time he would come in, if you'd see you, he'd remember. He may not remember the name, but he'd remember engaging with you previously.
And then he became part of the culture through the Miller Lite commercials and through Major League, right? And through Johnny, he was on Johnny Carson all the time.
It's his personality.
Yes.
You know, it was just self-deprecating.
Best seat in the house when he was at the top of the stadium.
Yep.
So RIP, Bob Uecker. But I wanted to tell you, I teased ahead to Cam Hayward having something to say about the Steelers' game plan, and also Marlon Humphrey with some cryptic quotes about the Steelers. Here's the thing that still really bothers me about that game, and as everybody who listens knows, I thought it would be a close game. I thought it would be like almost every other Steeler-Ravens game. Silly me, I didn't know the Steelers were going to quit, and that's what really bothered me about that game. And Kirk Herbstreit spoke to it in the first half, saying, where the hell is the fight? These are the Pittsburgh Steelers. It seemed like from the quotes coming out of that locker room late in the year from Najee Harris saying after the game that, you know what? Teams that listen to the media, you know, you get broken up by that. We listen to the media. He basically told the world we're a fractured team. And it looked like it that day, Bob. One thing I would never, ever question about Mike Tomlin or his teams up till then was that Mike Tomlin is passionate about his work. And if he has a strength as a coach, his number one strength, I always thought, was as an underdog to get the guys going. You know what I mean? To be that type of leader that you want to follow through a brick wall.
And never let a season just completely go away and disintegrate without a response. He always was, and still can be that way, although this postseason is a little bit different.
That was the first time in all my years of watching Tomlin Steelers that I sensed that a team had quit on him in that Baltimore game.
Well, I don't know if I'm going to go that far. It looked that way. What I will say was they were out-coached and out-schemed, and that can make you look like you're quitting.
That can. That's true. But then you look at a quote like the one that I'm seeing here from Marlon Humphrey, these cryptic quotes that I saw on, I think it was Steelers Depot here, under the headline on Steelers Depot, Ravens cornerback hints Steelers have, quote, underlying locker room issue. He's buddies with Patrick Queen. We know that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Deshaun Elliott. We know that, right? Might have listened to Deshaun Elliott's quotes after the game. This is Marlon Humphrey on his Punchline podcast on YouTube. He says, the team, the Steelers, to me, if you look just based off of what I very teeny bit know and based off what I feel like I've seen how it is, I feel like there's an underlying thing there somewhere internally that reminds me of the Jets' current situation, Humphrey says. I see quotes from Jets players. It seems like they're trying to speak in code. There's something they want to say and just can't say. There's a couple times I read Jets quotes, Humphrey says, from certain players, and it's like, yeah, nobody wants to dog somebody. You really can't tell the media what's going on. But it seems like kind of how the Steelers played in that game against us, .. quote, and I know something that I ain't going to say.
Okay. What are we supposed to make of that?
Did you watch the game? Have you heard the quotes from Elliott?
I know something. That last part, I'm asking you, what does that mean?
That means that there's I interpret that as there's some sort of dissension, bickering. Tomlin,
he was asked about bickering.
He was defended the bickering. Yeah. Oh, it's a good thing. It didn't look like it on the field. I have never seen a Steelers team quit on their coach.
No,
they quit on him the other night. That's what it looked like to me.
The finger pointing was very apparent, and the out of position was very apparent. Lack of communication was very
apparent.
Getting
run over was very apparent.
Yeah, all of it. And again, when you know that that team is lining up as if they're going to run every play, and yet you employ a defense that's more nickel suited than trying to stuff and, you know, put people in the box to stop what they're about to do, and you should have done that. They didn't have Zay Flowers. Yeah, they had some weapons on the tight end spot, but they weren't going to go in that direction.
Sure. And you're right. It can look like a team is quitting when they're that badly out-schemed. But, man, for a guy who obviously knows very well people inside that Steeler defense,
well, there's no question
the room,
that's alarming to hear.
When he says, I know something I ain't going to say, and it's prefaced by, I feel like there's an underlying thing there somewhere internally that reminds me of the Jets' current situation. What the hell is he talking about, limits?
Oh, I mean, Patrick Queen and Deshaun Elliott, being friends with them, have definitely said something that he just wants to tease it out there to try to get somebody to bite at, and maybe somebody else will report or create more speculation and doubt in the Steelers' locker room. I'm with you, though,
that
Joe.
Could be part of it, too. I mean, he sees an opportunity to knock him back even further, and he's going to take it.
I'm with you. They, at points, especially defensively, I think gave up in that game, where they just did not want any piece of Derrick Henry on a cold day in Baltimore.
I was just,
and Patrick Queen was one of them, and I know he was sick. That came out.
I was stunned watching it. However, what you say, Bob, I think there's a lot of truth to. And that's where this do we have the Hayward stuff limits, or should we tease to that?
Yeah, we got it.
Let's see. What is this from?
This is from his podcast, Not Just Football.
So this speaks to what you were speaking of, Bob, and what we all saw. And we can decide whether this is Cam ripping the game plan or throwing anyone under the bus or just stating the obvious here.
There were some things that were different we hadn't done. And you try to stop one and then the other goes off. I just, you know, trying to stop all, not stopping anything. Throughout it all, it just felt like we never really got a chance to, you know, take anything from the game, and then it kind of just opened up, you know, Pandora's box for what could go wrong in that game.
So he's talking about, you know, basically the defensive game plan there, and the key to me in that quote was that they changed what they had done against Lamar. They were the one team that had success against him. Why change?
Well, wow. Clearly, but you know, judging by what especially T.J. Watt did, they were talking about getting after Derrick Henry at all costs.
Yeah, and they were challenging Lamar to beat them on the ground.
But well, they should be aware of that, because when it happened the last time, they controlled him in every time they've played him, they've done a good job of keeping him in contain, so he wasn't that factor. Now, Derrick Henry gives them a different dimension. I understand why you'd want to take it away, but it's not like a normal quarterback. It's one thing to have Derrick Henry with an average quarterback who never runs, then fine, you can do that all you want because that guy ain't going to take off. But you got to respect his legs. And it wasn't like he wasn't running coming into this game. He still had almost 900 yards rushing on the year, or over 900.
Right.
So he was as viable a threat as Derrick Henry was. You have to put all your people up front, stop it at all costs. If they beat you down the field, so be it. That's the way I would have gone after that game. But never before in his career has he had as many RPO runs in a row as he did in this game.
And never before had a Steeler team allowed that many yards to somebody in a playoff game, talking about Henry.
Right.
So, yes, give credit to the Ravens, but I know I'm not the only one who saw that and felt that. My God, Kirk Herbstreit was, I mean, do we have that clip? Limits?
Pony came in here and interrupted me again.
In the middle
back
of the
back-to-back days.
Okay. I think you should go on that show for a couple of days.
He said, he came in and said that I'm a major topic on his show today.
Why? What did you do?
I don't know.
Uh-oh.
Is he talking about you stealing the thing at Duquesne?
What did I steal at Duquesne?
A Rice Krispie treat.
The Rice Krispie treat.
Joe, that's a Rice Krispie treat. They probably have a bunch left over they're going to throw away.
I'm kidding, give them
Bob.
A dollar. To...
I'm kidding on the Rice Krispie treat, for God's sakes.
But you keep
Why
pounding
are you
it?
A major topic?
That Pony wouldn't tell me. I don't know. I guess we'll just have
did
to listen. That's a good old-fashioned radio tease.
Did you do something untoward on camera last night at the Duquesne game? I was sitting right next to you.
No, you were next to me the whole time.
Behaved yourself. Yeah.
I did. You were more wild up than me.
Bob, this is interesting. How does he become a major topic on that show?
I don't know, but that's a tease now for people to tune in at 2 o'clock, and
it
you'll
sure
find
is.
Out.
I just, that game the other day really left me with almost a sick feeling. The fact that the Steelers didn't show up for a playoff game in Baltimore.
Yeah, they were.
And the reason why is they were either completely out-schemed, out-classed talent-wise, and, you know, out-efforted in the game. And like I said, that's what I meant to tell you, Limits. Bring up that Kirk Herbstreit clip that all of America heard in watching the Steelers. I mean, it's just, it was mind-blowing to hear it, Bob, but he said it.
If I were a Steelers fan, the thing that would concern me just watching this first half, you're in the postseason. You're getting dominated. I don't see any fight. I don't see any pushback. It's one thing to lose XOs against a really talented offense, but where the hell is the fight? This is the Pittsburgh Steelers. Yeah. There's nothing. They're just going through the motion.
Jarring.
And it was accurate.
And Kirk Herbstreit, I think, is a very smart guy in terms of how he breaks down games. If he thought it was simply a matter of X's and O's, then he would have said it. But there was no emotion whatsoever. None visible at all. It was like they knew they were doomed and were just going to their slaughter quietly. It was so strange. I mean, if you respect this franchise, and I do respect the history of the Pittsburgh Steelers greatly, this was one of their ultimate humiliations, just watching that thing unfold. And yet it appears the biggest fallout from it will be like getting rid of what, the running backs coach? I mean, it's just, and that's why I say, yeah, I guess it was unacceptable to everybody, but in what action is it being unacceptable going to be played out? With what kind of action? I don't know. That's the thing.
And we'll see. He said lots of changes on lots of levels. We'll find out what those are.
What does
are.
That mean to you, Mr. P? What do you think we're going to see this offseason?
Changes? Probably one positional coach and a couple of new players, and they'll consider that their change. Maybe Justin Fields being a quarterback will be their big change. No more Cam Sutton, everybody. That's their huge change in the secondary.
Yeah, that'll be big.
That'll be big.
I think that was also
Austin's
a personal.
Gone.
That kind of him playing that day over Beanie Bishop. I'm sorry. I'd rather go with a young, hungry guy as a rookie who played pretty well and did more things than Cam Sutton did. You know, I mean, that was kind of a. I don't even know why he was brought back.
What kind of takes have you had lately, Limits, that would lead to you being a major focal point of the afternoon show? The last time you were like in their lead segment was when you said that Steelers fans have more respect than hate for the Ravens.
Yeah,
remember that?
And remember that Ben and John Harbaugh on Hard Knocks, everybody says that, you know, we hate these guys, but we respect them.
What have you said lately that's a hot take that they may have seized upon?
Maybe moving on from Tristan Jarry was the right deal. That wouldn't be it. I'm scrolling through my Twitter timeline.
Bob, has he said anything that incendiary lately?
I've always been a huge anti-Tristan Jarry person.
No.
I never thought he was the guy.
No, it's got to be Steeler related. It has to be.
Maybe it's that I think that they should tank, well, not tank, but, you know, lose as much as possible this year and have this is probably what it is. The draft is here next year in 2026, that the Steelers should draft their next franchise quarterback during that class, which is going to be a loaded quarterback class.
When did you say that?
I said it on Twitter yesterday.
Oh.
Got 1,000 likes.
That's it.
That's probably it.
That's it, Bob. How about a rousing game of cut him, keep him, trade him, sign him?
Let's
Would you
do
like
it.
To play that?
We've been teasing that all day. That'll be the top of this hour, which we're at right now.